Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It was halfway through the map when we noticed that the admins had called a pause. That usually happens when, say, the monitor goes off or somebody's device is not working or the internet is lagging. But it was lasting way longer than a normal technical pause.
This is real. This guy, this kid, my player, has been caught cheating. And everything kind of just went black.
You're listening to extracts from Hacker Hunter Next Level, a new mini-series about three gamers who found a way, or several, to beat the system and what happened next.
I spent 20 years of my life hacking online video games.
This is a story of four guys that are playing a video game, and can they hack it? Can they recreate this?
The cheating industry, it's massive. There is a lot of money involved.
If gaming itself is a multi-billion dollar industry, then video game cheating is also a multi-million dollar industry.
It was, oh my gosh, we can make a lot of money out of this.
This is a true crime podcast. Well, to be more accurate, this is a true cybercrime series that we will be launching today and throughout January on the Euronews Tech Talks feed. I, James Thomas, your host, can't wait to share their stories. Over the three episodes, we'll travel to India and the US to meet three hackers, Anthony, Forsaken, and Manfred. The three have somehow been involved in some of the most notorious hacking cases in the history of video games.
Forsaken was intending to cheat from a pretty long time ago.
Anthony was the smartest among us. He was like the best.
My name is Adrian. Online, I'm known as Manfred, and I spent 20 years of my life hacking video games.
Their stories present us with deeply human dilemmas. Are they criminals or not? Have they done something illegal or not? Have they harmed anyone or not? Let's step together into the mind of a hacker. But first of all, we have here an expert in cybersecurity and the executive producer of the series to introduce the topic and the series as a whole. Cybersecurity is vital in our super digitalized societies. 91% of cyber attacks against large corporations are phishing emails. Over 22 billion corporate records were exposed in 2022 alone. Ransomware attacks, a form of malware that encrypts a victim's files, occurred every 2 seconds. 43% of cyber attacks targeted small businesses. The average cost of a corporate data breach is around 5 million euros. Over 30,000 websites fell victim to hacking daily. Human error played a role in 95% of cyber attacks, underscoring the lack of cybersecurity education and awareness. So, let's start talking about it. Marco Preuss and Rainer Bock are here today in this episode to introduce the mini-series Hacker Hunter Next Level that we're launching from today and throughout January on the Euronews Tech Talks feed. Can you introduce yourselves for us, please? Marco, let's start with you. Who are you?
Hi, I'm researcher and also manager at GRAIT, the Global Research and Analysis Team at Kaspersky.
Fantastic. And Rainer, who are you?
I'm the head of brand content at a cybersecurity firm called Kaspersky, also the executive producer of a series called Hacker Hunter, which is originally a film documentary series that we're now turning into a exciting podcast here.
Yes, Hacker Hunter Next Level is the story of three gamers who found a way to hack the system, how they did it, what the consequences were. So let's, through the course of this discussion, try not to reveal too many spoilers, or any spoilers, hopefully. But let's speak about the three of them, the three hackers, Anthony, Manfred, and Forsaken.
Why did you become interested in them, and why these three in particular? Rainer, do you want to start?
When we start producing a new series, we'd be doing quite a bit of research. We were taking a few months usually to find interesting cases. And the only thing that was on our minds at the very beginning was we want to do a few stories about hacking in gaming. Manfred is someone who then very quickly appears on the radar because he's a very outspoken person in that industry, if you want to call game hacking an industry. And yeah, so he was kind of obvious. And then, you know, we've been producing this Hacker Hunter series since 2019 actually. And you get a network then, right?
Was it difficult to contact them or their circles, their network? How do you actually go about something like that, and how easy was it?
It depends a bit. You know, you have cases that have not been reported on too much, and people have a feeling like these are stories that need to be told, and then often they are easily convinced. And then you must be a bit lucky that several people want to speak to you. And in those cases, I mean, Manfred's story is Manfred's story. So he was easily convinced. He's outspoken. He wants to tell his story because he thinks other people need to learn from it. While Anthony and Forsaken were a bit more difficult to pull together because we needed many people to tell us their part of the story. But I think we took like 4 weeks of initial research to find people, contact people. And yes, there were people who would say, we are not speaking to you. But most of them looked at the work that we've done before, looked at the films that we've done before, and were then easily convinced to say, yeah, you seem to be knowing what you're talking about there, and you seem to not be scandalizing stories or whatever. So as soon as we had contact, I think people are easy to convince.
Yeah, I'm sure it helps once you know one person to introduce them to another person and another, and yeah, through word of mouth, trust is built. So I will see through each of their stories, each of their scenarios, that they used various loopholes to beat the system. So to what extent can we say what they're doing is illegal? Marco, are you able to take this one?
In one of the episodes, it was clear and also described a bit that it was not always easy to really frame it that black, white, this is illegal, this is not illegal. So it really depends on the specific country. You have different laws and policies regarding such things in all of the countries worldwide. There is no real common understanding of that. What I personally prefer more is, before asking about if it's illegal or not, is the question, is it okay to do it? Is it morally okay to do it, first of all? Usually in the IT scene, security area, you have this kind of code of conduct of things, how you behave when you found, for example, vulnerabilities. And to the question, if it's okay or not to exploit certain vulnerabilities. When it goes into exploiting a vulnerability and then using it for your own gains to make money or whatsoever, then of course this pretty fast falls into, it's not ethically okay to do that. And then in many cases, it also quite easily falls into the terms of illegal activities.
Yeah, I assume there are instances in which it's okay, perhaps for the greater good, or if there's a public interest in hacking or carrying out some of these, well, what some people might say, sort of more illicit activities.
The motivation is a question, right? If you hack a system because you want to demonstrate that the system is vulnerable, that's good. That's a positive thing. If you hack a system because you want to earn enough money to buy a new house, that's obviously not the right motivation. I personally think in these three cases, emotionally, I would say Anthony has not done anything illegal. Manfred might have done illegal things, but it didn't really harm him. And Forsaken in many countries has not done anything illegal. Nevertheless, everybody will most likely, after listening to that episode, then agree that he has done something that was morally entirely wrong. So Yeah, motivation is a big factor. And if you do things because you want to improve the world, then it's great. If you do things because you want to improve your wealth, maybe, it's maybe not okay.
I think that's the interesting thing with this, specifically three episodes, that it's also to the listener to some extent to decide for themselves on what side, like how they would decide on these cases, because they're interesting and therefore complex and not so easy to judge and put into this black or white scenario.
We're talking about cases that happened a decade or two ago. So are they still relevant, or has the landscape changed significantly since then?
Well, the landscape changed, of course, because you have like new platforms, new frameworks. Nowadays, there is even more money into it. You have huge industry in terms of entertainment, esports, globally, the huge events. So the things got more broad and more interesting, but also the vendors took more efforts into protecting their games and systems against such kind of easy wins, easy gains, easy hacks. You have now way more, even at home, even when you're not playing on these really professional levels. So things develop, and that's just the natural case in this area. And I think it will just continue to evolve. We now have legal ways to like make a living on gaming. When you look at the crypto area, for example, like crypto-based games, you have not only the black markets for goods and stuff, but also approved markets. So the things changed.
Now, as we see in some of the episodes, hackers are not usually lone wolves. They don't work alone. They use networks to sort of build upon each other's knowledge. Where do they actually find each other? If, you know, I'm a hacker, not that I am, but if I were a hacker and I wanted to reach out to other people to kind of, you know, hack something, how do I find other people like me?
First of all, I wouldn't fully go into hackers are not usually lone wolves. I think there are many, many bright minds out there who are on this lone wolf track to work alone, to do their stuff alone. That's quite okay. That's been going on for decades, basically. And I think this is still valid. On the other side, you have the different methods nowadays, how people interact. Of course, the communication channels in the past were a bit more limited and completely different from what we have nowadays. So nowadays, you have a lot of different frameworks. One famous thing, of course, is the dark web or darknet, which is just a term referring to many, many different frameworks, honestly. So there is not this dark web dot, that's it. There are many, many different areas which are referred to as dark web.
Is the dark web easy to access?
Yeah, so the dark web is easy to access, depending on the platform you're aiming for. One of the most famous ones, of course, is Tor. You just download a piece of software, a dedicated browser, to be able to access that. And from that, you can like explore the online network. But you also have others, which sometimes are referred to as darknet, like messengers. Telegram is one famous thing, because it's the term basically refers to areas which are not easily being indexed by public systems or who have layers of encryption. That's why I'd say like the communication channels nowadays are more easy, more broad. You have a lot of forums in the dark net in certain areas, but also on the clear web. You have these messengers like Telegram and many, many others, honestly, where exchange is given, and these kind of either lone wolves or small teams, small groups exchange on their technical advantages and knowledge and expertise.
So all three of our characters are extremely intelligent. They're gifted with coding. They spend their days playing video games. I mean, maybe minus the gifted with coding. Reiner, how can we tell that our children, or, you know, our nephews, our nieces, are not hackers themselves?
The psychologist that we worked with on this series, she would always say, well, speak to them. right? The most important is have conversations, be in conversation with your kids and figure out what they're actually doing. You might not understand everything, but usually children, teenagers, whatever, they have an interest in communicating. And if they have trouble, they want to share it. Yet, is it very likely that that your kids would come to you and say, oh, by the way, I'm hacking systems? Most likely not. So you'd have to look for certain indicators. We've done a story that is not part of this podcast where a mother found out that her 8-year-old son was some sort of hacking because he ordered a gun to the door. So he ordered a gun and it came by mail. That's how she found out that he was a hacker. That is maybe a bit late.
Quite a surprise as well.
Definitely was a surprise for her. I think if kids are retreating, spending a lot of time in front of their computers in their rooms, and they are obviously not playing, I think that could be a sign. But I think Marco might have a better idea of what constitutes a child hacker, maybe.
Just short, I think, and that's very important, being a hacker is not per se something bad. There are many, many good hackers, many good people, defenders, consider themselves as hackers, because the term hackers is not per se a criminal or whatsoever. It's then just, coming back to the beginning of the talk, it's more a question of the motivation, what you're using your abilities for. So being a hacker could also be a very good job alternative, for example, or very easy spotting of future job opportunities. So it's just a question of to check with the child if it's going into a wrong direction, what you would usually also do in physical world. I mean, you don't want your kid to become a drug dealer or something like that. You also have your methods to check that everything is going right in the physical world and basically apply the same to the digital world. And communication, as Rana said, is the key point here. Communication, as long as you have a good relation with your child, I don't see there is something to worry, and you can even encourage and drive it in the right direction.
Is it though addictive once you get into hacking? Is it something that is hard to stop doing once you get good at it?
Well, in many cases, I would say it's kind of a lifestyle. You're doing it. If it's addictive, I wouldn't say the term addictive is right, because when you are that way, when you develop that way, it's simply the natural thing what you're doing. It's your lifestyle. It's who you are and how you are and what you're doing. Like other people have their hobbies or their way of thinking, musicians, for example. I tend to referring as a creative way of doing things and working and thinking, like in art.
Can you give any examples or any sort of further examples of how hacking can be used for good? Or, you know, we hear about this term hacktivism. What is hacktivism, and can you give some examples of it?
Hacktivism is a difficult term, to be honest, because it doesn't mean per se that it's good. It's basically hacking or digital activism with a given purpose. Most cases is socially motivated, politically motivated, with the idea to do something good for the society or for the world. In the physical world, we have, for example, demonstrations, things like that. You have flyers, you have books, you have like communication strikes. And there is this idea to transfer these activities into the digital world. The problem here is that it's a bit more complicated to really separate and differentiate between what activities are okay to do and what activities directly goes into the direction of illegal activities, malicious activities. We have seen in the past, for example, some huge so-called DDoS attacks. Basically, many people call up a website, and due to these many requests, the website goes down. It cannot handle this mass of traffic coming in. So the website basically gets shut down. The problem here is that it causes harm, either to the vendor or to potential customers or so. So it's always a bit tricky to really say if it's for good or not.
How are countries protecting themselves from cyber attacks or being hacked? Rainer, if you're able to answer this one.
Yeah, different countries are most likely using different strategies. There are countries that are building their own secluded version of the internet to make sure that they can survive without the internet, the global internet. That's a certain way of protection. It's usually goes hand in hand with censorship, though. But all in all, I think countries are using this similar strategies as companies are using, and it's a really complicated mix of different measures to put together now.
The problem here is when we're talking about countries and states, we're talking about the physical world. And the digital world, there are no states, no countries. There are no borders and separation, except if physical countries put in their kind of separation, what Rainer just mentioned. There are some who have like their kind of isolated internet, which is heavily controlled. But then the rest of the world, it's a bit more tricky because you cannot easily draw these lines. So different countries came up with different ideas and regulations how to fight attacks. But overall, there is no clear solution to that, really, because it's an interconnected world. You have these communication channels. Simple example, when we're talking about the cloud, which is like a common thing nowadays, and you upload a document to that cloud. That document may be uploaded to a server in, let's say, Germany, and then the next minute it gets replicated or moved to a server in the United States, and after that, after a few seconds, gets moved to a server in Brazil, for example, because the cloud is just an interconnected system as well for the different vendors. And that's basically the same for the overall scenario. So it is really complex. You cannot really say this belongs or is in the area of a given country.
So to wrap up and to bring it back to the mini-series Hacker Hunter Next Level, can you each tell me what your favourite episode of the series is and why? But please, again, no spoilers.
I think for me it's Anthony. It's a very, very emotional, very human story that at the same time has one of the really big questions of the digital world in the centre of it. And hence it is relevant, it is very human, it is a sad story, but it's my favorite of those three, yeah.
Honestly, for me, it's also Anthony, because, yeah, it's interesting from that perspective that you also have like a small group of people, which makes it really engaging. And it's something I guess people will understand quite easily. They will get into it, will touch. Like for me, it touched me. And it's a really good starting point. But honestly, I like all of them. So it's really hard to decide because there are so many different aspects and each one will give you this specific piece of a new point of view. And that really drives me. That I like that.
Well, there you go. All our listeners will have to check all the episodes out. Thank you both very much for joining us. But it's not the end. We're looking forward to having you back again at the end of the mini series to answer questions from our audience. So thank you very much, both of you, and speak to you again soon. That's it for this episode. But I recommend you stay tuned. Right after this episode, Hacker Hunter Next Level begins. Our first protagonist is Anthony. Anthony and three of his gamer friends realised they could hack one of the most popular video games ever invented, and it wasn't long before serious money started rolling in. And they didn't hide. They believed they were doing nothing wrong. However, the FBI would end up raiding their homes. I'm your host, James Thomas. This series is written and produced by Marta Rodriguez Martinez. The theme music is by Leo Lebrun. Sound editing is by Guillaume Carroll, and sound mixing is by Mathieu Duchesne. Our editor-in-chief is Ali Issan Aydin. If you aren't already, you can listen to the series on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Castbox, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please consider leaving us a positive review and, of course, sharing it. Thanks for listening.